This episode of Moon Tower Business is brought to you by your local State Farm agent, Alejandra de la Torre. Alejandra's team has amazing customer service, knowledgeable staff, and super competitive pricing. They also have a very convenient location in Round Rock, located at 2200 North A.W. Grimes Boulevard, Suite 500. Alejandra's team is bilingual, and they have over 52 years of combined experience in the insurance industry. Alejandra's team is very friendly and helpful, and they always go the extra mile. They even have after-hours emergency availability. So please call Alejandra's State Farm team for all of your insurance needs, whether it's auto, home, life, or business. Their telephone number is 512-244-3311, or you can see their website at www.alexdelatorre.net. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Moon Tower Business Podcast. This is your host, Joseph Obell, and today I have the pleasure of speaking to Bill Noble, who is a senior market analyst at Token Metrics. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Bill, I'd like to get into the nuts and bolts of Token Metrics in a second, but maybe just introduce yourself to listeners, talk a little bit about the things you've been involved in the past, please.
Certainly. I've got a 20 plus year background in legacy. I started in the currency markets as an intern the summer that Iraq invaded Kuwait back in August of 1990. That was such an insane event. I said, how does anyone navigate this? That's when I picked up my first chart book. That was the beginning of a long career in managing highly volatile markets and producing analysis during, the dot-com crash, 2002, doing analysis at Goldman Sachs, doing mission critical work in the middle of the great financial crisis. And then eventually, after, doing legacy markets, I got a phone call from somebody who used to read my work at Goldman, and he said, hey, man, we would love to hear what you have to say about crypto. And I'm like, oh, my God, how do I figure this out? So I grabbed a pencil, started charting it by hand. All right. And I have been deep in crypto for 4 years, learning the game and learning how to help people get involved in this space. Because I'm not only passionate about crypto, but I'm really passionate about helping people understand and navigate.
Gotcha. So what was that transition like, looking at numbers and charts for legacy finance and then switching to crypto? I guess, what kind of resources did you look at, did you use to, I guess, look at the numbers and the metrics, but also kind of the technology behind them?
All right. So this is a good question. So my initial focus was on mixing crypto and combining it with, say, legacy markets, interest rates, foreign exchange, stocks, and gold, kind of putting it all together. So that was my first.
And Bill, what was that transition like from the legacy financial system to crypto? And what kind of resources did you look at to learn about, I guess, the metrics in these different coins? And then like, the underlying technology behind them?
Well, first and foremost, I had to learn and study Bitcoin, which I did under kind of my first group that I worked at, run by Charlie Schrem, who's kind of like a famous Bitcoin pioneer. Then what I did was I started to mix Bitcoin and crypto. Okay. Instead of just looking at it by itself, I mixed in interest rates, stocks, even geopolitics. And I created a research framework that combined everything instead of just looking at crypto. Now, for things like metrics, back when I first started, it was really just charts and whatever it is I could dig up in terms of what was new out there from things like conferences or things that our other fundamental analysts would work on. So I'm always looking to synthesize information. All right. That's what I was good at Goldman and in the legacy markets. All right. And now, obviously, with Tokenmetrics, I've been able to take that to a whole new level. You know, so I went from just charts in the beginning to now something new.
What kind of similarities did you see in, I guess, previous like highly volatile assets that you were looking at in the legacy financial system versus what you're seeing in crypto?
Okay, excellent thought process here. So in legacy, you know, a normal correction will be 5% in stocks. A bear market or an extended correction, say like we had in 2010, off the Greece insolvency issue, you know, that could be 20%. Then an incident like the Great Financial Crisis, where you have a 40 or 50% correction in stocks, was literally considered a crash that required the Fed come in and print money for 12 years. Now in crypto, a normal correction is 20%. You have to be able to expect 20% fluctuations, and it really isn't considered a big deal, even though it is hard to deal with. So in crypto, 20% is the 5% from legacy. And in crypto, you can see 60%, which is the 20% from legacy, right? So 60, 50% corrections. I think there's going to be less of that going forward, but that's the difference in the landscape.
Gotcha. I mean, and you said you got involved about 4 years ago?
Right. I got involved summer of 2017. So I got in at Bitcoin 5,000, watched it go to 20, then watched it go from 20 to 3. Okay. Then lived with the bear market from, you know, 3 to 6 for well over a year. So I've seen multiple cycles.
A lot has happened since you, I guess, first got involved in crypto. I mean, a country has made a Bitcoin legal tender. We just saw a Bitcoin futures ETF launched this past about a week ago. There's a Bitcoin ETF in Canada. Institutions are piling into crypto. There's different regulations going on. So you've seen quite a bit since you got started, I bet.
Right. Crypto has a way of forcing you to be innovative in thinking, right? In other words, every 3 to 6 years in legacy, you might have to change your research framework. In crypto, it's every 3 to 6 months. So I've seen crypto go from Bitcoin being a wildly speculative asset to Bitcoin being considered your dad's crypto.
Right.
In other words, Bitcoin is now like the new S&P or the new NASDAQ, where you dollar cost average and that's it, right? Now, back in 2017 or even before that, you know, Bitcoin was considered, you know, the Wild West at best, right? I mean, it had a bad reputation in some circles. Okay. Now, you know, the SEC is approving an ETF because it wants legacy investors invested in Bitcoin versus going into some of the more speculative versions of the crypto universe. Right. So, you know, crypto has a funny way of always expanding potentially speculative excess. Right. The SEC is like, oh my God, we hated Bitcoin. Now we consider that, dare I say it, the most traditional part of crypto that makes the most sense based on institutional adoption.
No doubt. So when did Tokenmetrics launch? And then I guess what was the inspiration behind the company and the products that are being offered?
Okay, Tokenmetrics was built during the unbelievable bear market of 2018 and 2019. It was launched late in the year of 2019, literally at the bottom of a just completely despair-driven crypto winter that lasted 2 years. Okay. The thinking behind Tokenmetrics is an extension of the genius of our CEO, Ian Bellina. You know, in 2017, during the altcoin, you know, essentially bubble that occurred, he turned 10,000 into 5 million. Okay. Became, you know, pretty much a crypto-wide and possibly a worldwide celebrity because he was releasing his analytics on YouTube. The next thing he did with his fortune was invest it to create Tokenmetrics, which was almost like Ian Bellina's spreadsheet 2.0. Okay, now that launched in an environment of total despair, and then we took off right when the pandemic started. And that's when, you know, the Fed printed $6 trillion from 2008 to 2019. Then the Fed printed $6 trillion in March of 2020. So when you put that much money in the system, the case for crypto from Satoshi Nakamoto's original white paper in 2008, all of a sudden, that value proposition became apparent. Tokenmetrics took off because we're like a roadmap to help people make money in crypto. At the moment where the entire world discovered crypto out of necessity.
And your CEO, what kind of background does he have? And how did he get involved in crypto?
Okay, so this ties deeply into Tokenmetrics. So Ian Bellina started off as like a salesperson for enterprise software for IBM, particularly in the IBM Watson AI arena. So he got his initial claim to fame was using Watson to develop his March Madness NCAA tournament bracket predictions, which was featured in the Wall Street Journal. So Ian Bellina has a knack for AI and the business development skills from institutional selling, along with an extremely affable YouTube personality that is wrapped into his ability to look at really small crypto startups and be able to evaluate, you know, hey, this could be the next 100 or 1,000x. So he not only did that in 2017, but he actually picked coins in 2019. One of them actually did 1,000x. So he has like a combined genius that he used to help create the whole Tokenmetrics platform from A to Z.
This is an interesting product, just given that the number of cryptocurrencies that are out there and that keep on coming out every day. And I mean, there's a lot of different angles you have to look at in assessing these. And I guess what are some of these metrics that you look at in these cryptocurrencies that are out in the market right now?
First, we have our ranking systems. So we're using a combination of, you know, momentum indicators and things that people may be familiar with, like say just simple moving averages. But then we're extending that to quantitative metrics, okay? Like everything you would find in a graduate finance textbook. So we're taking basic price action. We're taking quantitative risk management metrics. We're teaching a machine how to look at those metrics. And then we're having machine learning engineers essentially program that, okay, and allow the machine to learn and the AI to learn based on the inputs that we originally gave. So our AI and our ranking system, okay, which has a twofold approach, right? First, we rank the coins and our machines learn how to continue to rank them. And then once they're ranked, we have financial engineers on the portfolio side, right? So not unlike your, you know, your Schwab or your Fidelity portfolio, except ours are built with coins ranked by AI and then put through sophisticated portfolio models that give you either a portfolio you can implement or a good idea of what, say, the top five or six coins, not investment advice, but the top five or six coins to either look at or do your own research on the small coins. In other words, how do you filter 6,000 cryptos? How do you know what to do on Coinbase, even if there's 100, right? It's like, okay, I have Bitcoin, I have Ethereum, now what?
Right.
We give you that roadmap.
And that probably changes pretty frequently, right? Day to day. I mean, they move quite a bit. And so I'm sure that that kind of lineup probably changes.
Right. Our AI indices, you know, they change as the market changes. I think the only instance where, you know, I saw our models really stick to something was day after day after day. We saw Solana, which is very much like Ethereum. If you're in Austin and you think about Mopac or 35, those are like the two main arteries. You know, Ethereum is Mopac and Solana is like 35. These are highways that allow like decentralized finance and content to travel on. So we saw Solana day after day after day in our daily portfolios, and Solana went from, you know, from 40 to 200. So yes, they do change, but you want to pay particular attention for when our AI goes, oh yeah, day after day after day, that's the one.
Gotcha. Can you talk a little bit about the different product offerings you have? And, you know, somebody goes to your website, what are the things that are the services you have available to customers?
Okay, so we have an $18 a month service that gives you access to our rankings and a weekly newsletter. Okay, now, if that's too much, we do have a YouTube page. So it's youtube.com/tokenmetrics, where you can watch pieces of our weekly live stream. Now, I'm bringing up the live stream because we have a new product coming out called Tokenmetrics TV, where it's me every day doing a market update plus other sophisticated analysts. Now, that's going to be priced in like a Netflix area. That's also available to anybody who subscribes to our mid-tier plan, which gives you the rankings, the indices. Remember how I talked about how important that was, right? And Tokenmetrics TV. Then as you start to move higher in pricing, we have private Telegram groups that give you direct access to me and also meld you into a network of really smart people who are in there discussing and providing you essentially with an education and ideas of their own. So Tokenmetrics at the in that center plan, we have, you know, a continued process of delivering content 7 days a week, right? We're improving that to an institutional level. So you're getting, even on our middle tier plan, you're getting AI, portfolios, television, and human analytics in your inbox. So multiple ways to look at the market, human, AI, print, media. And then if you want to go one step further, I would call it interactive via Telegram.
Gotcha. How about the your user base? What does that look like in terms of like generally like demographics and geography?
Okay, good question. So Tokenmetrics is very much like the crypto world in general. You know, it's primarily men ranging in income from 80 to 120. Okay, so it's people with disposable income who have money that they can afford to lose or a much higher risk tolerance because, you know, they're younger and if they lose money, they have time to recover. Okay, I think to state the obvious, we want to get all demographics from all countries, right? So it's America, it's UK and Australia right now. The television product is designed to appeal to like, you know, EM, emerging markets, and other places to get a lower dollar price point to get, you know, real content and analytics to people at a price that they can afford.
Gotcha. And is this primarily for like retail crypto investors, or are there any kind of institutional people in the institutional world that, that would be interested in some of this information from you?
Okay. Another good question. So primarily right now, our product offering, you know, is retail based. You know, we're in the process of, you know, elevating everything we do to be able to market this as an institutional subscription, you know, allowing for VIP access to analysts, particularly the quant guys that help develop the models. So we think there's a market because corporate treasuries, institutions, they have to be able to get what's next in crypto, either in a report, TV, or on a website. They need to be able to do their own research. And like I said earlier, this idea of a roadmap is going to be applied to everybody. We think it applies to both retail and institutions because everybody is going to need that roadmap that combines human and AI intelligence.
Understood. How about competition? What does that look like right now? Are there other companies that are doing similar offerings? And, you know, what does it look like generally in the space?
All right. In the space, there are a variety of competitors. You know, some are like almost like news services. You know, others track, you know, what coins are being moved into, you know, the wallets, or what coins are being bought and sold by smart money. You know, that's a very high dollar service. You know, other competitors focus on, you know, what they call on-chain metrics. So they glean data off the blockchain. This is something we're rapidly moving into ourselves. So they're gleaning data off the blockchain, and I would call it watching flows. So our competition is focused on flows. We're developing our own metrics and melding that into our AI, right? So the competition focuses on metrics and interpretation. So for on-chain metrics, you know, our competitors are looking at flows on the blockchain. We are using on-chain metrics ourselves, but we're melding that into grades. So we have grades for coins, and we're going to be grading coins based on the on-chain metrics. So the competition, which in this area is robust, is offering data, which you can look up yourself, and they'll show you how to use it. But what we're doing is we're factoring it into our AI and machine learning, okay, to give you a grade and expand that over a wide variety of coins. So instead of having to look up metrics yourself, you can just say, okay, Bitcoin, based on on-chain flows, the grade is now 60 or 70 or 80 or 10. So you don't have to figure it out because AI and machine learning are figuring it out for you. And the more data we feed the machine learning and AI engine, the better and faster it learns. So our competition has a lot of data to go through, okay, on its own, and requires you to do so. We're feeding our data to AI to help synthesize it and break it down so you can make, you know, faster choices without having to quit your full-time job to learn it.
So can you talk a little bit more about the data that you're gathering generally? You know, there's quite a few different exchanges out there, United States and internationally. And my understanding is that sometimes prices can vary from exchange to exchange slightly. How does that play into kind of the data that you're gathering on these coins?
Okay, so for portfolios, we track, you know, daily, weekly, and monthly portfolios for a variety of exchanges. So if you want more plain vanilla, we have Coinbase, then it goes to Kraken, Binance, you know, KuCoin, et cetera, right? So we're tracking different exchanges As far as, you know, strange price action and difference between Bitcoin here and Bitcoin there, you know, that doesn't necessarily come into play, but we are tracking exchanges because they have different coin listings, right? So some are more focused traditionally Coinbase, others like Uniswap have got the entire altcoin universe. So that's how we track that. We also have a really nifty machine learning platform that reads social media. So we say, okay, is social media bullish on Bitcoin? Is it bearish? Or is social media across Twitter, Reddit, okay, and all the other platforms like Telegram? Our machine learning engines and our AI is actually reading data from these platforms and telling you what the world is bullish or bearish on. Now, don't you have to subjectively think about how to act on that? But I mean, can you imagine having to sift through crypto Twitter and figure out whether or not the market's going to go up or down? Or would you rather go to a page and have a sentiment aggregator tell you, yeah, social media as a whole is talking about, you know, Filecoin, Cosmos, Polkadot, right? So it gives you an idea, again, of what to look for quickly. That's the key, quickly.
How does the, like, the kind of the geopolitical aspect play into this data analytics, like, you know, China banning cryptocurrency mining, an ETF launching in Bitcoin, and the El Salvador making Bitcoin legal tender, stuff like that? How does that play into the analytics?
That's where the humans come in. Okay, that's me, that's us, that's the human research team. There's certain things the AI can and cannot see, although the AI can pick up and start learning from the changes in price action, right? So, you know, China bans cryptocurrency. Okay, there's a one-day down move off that, and then Bitcoin takes off. So the AI doesn't know the event. We know the event, and we cover that, right? Which is why you have a human analytics team, right? In other words, what did El Salvador mean? Well, here's an example. Did you know that there are Bitcoin ATMs going up all over Latin America? And of course, there was news recently that Walmart is putting these Bitcoin ATMs in. So really, the El Salvador news, even though it's amazing that it's legal tender, all right, really, I think the El Salvador story was a stealth version of the Bitcoin ATM theme. Because if there's a Bitcoin ATM on the corner of every US city, just the way there's a bank and a regular US dollar ATM, I think that's going to really reduce the amount of volatility in Bitcoin. That's going to create a natural demand that can help smooth out so that you don't have these 50% crashes. You have more normal price action where a correction might be 20%. So ATM, El Salvador to ATMs to reduce volatility, okay, to creating a more investable asset. Okay, that's what we do in addition to finding those small projects, right? The hidden gems. So we literally have a hidden gems department that actually finds the projects before they start trading. So we're the, you know, instead of the artificial intelligence, we are the intelligence division of the cryptocurrency world finding what's next.
It's interesting to see how many different things in the news can affect the price of cryptocurrency. Just one of them is like the other day, Elon Musk tweeted the positions he has in cryptocurrency, and that affected the price, I think, in several different cryptos.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, it's wild to see, you know, different news headlines can really shift the price. I mean, temporarily, right? But it's wild to see how that happens.
Right. And crypto is a free natural flowing market, and people getting on the tape and talking their book or saying positive things about their positions really is as old as the hill. It's new to a lot of people, but one of the reasons why you know, since I'm over the age of 35, guys like me saw markets when, you know, commodities, bonds, and things like that moved around, not as much as crypto, but this idea of getting on the tape or getting on Twitter or getting on the news and saying, yeah, I love Bitcoin. Yeah, I bought some. Or yeah, it's going up after I bought some. Yeah. Okay. This is all new because of social media. But the fact of the matter is, it's kind of as old as the hill, really. So yes, it is amazing how social media changed it. It is amazing that if you weren't talking about Bitcoin a couple of months ago, you weren't relevant on Twitter. You weren't. So
do you see that altcoins are pretty directly correlated to the price of Bitcoin?
In a raging uptrend, yes. Sometimes, you know, altcoins require big brother Bitcoin to slow down, you know, before the more technology sensitive or speculative assets to rise, right? It very much depends on what's going on. And that's one of the keys for our AI and our human analytics to figure out whether it's like Bitcoin season, where Bitcoin dominates, or whether it's altcoin season. Now, altcoins, for people out there, Bitcoin is the future of money. Altcoins is the future of technology. It's like NASDAQ back in 1999, right? The things that are coming out, the protocols that are being built, the platforms, and sometimes the tokens associated with them, although highly speculative in nature, can yield really big returns if you understand and can find, you know, the gems, the themes, and the sectors to be in, just like regular tech investing, just like that. And in Austin, okay, where I spent, you know, many years, you know, this idea of finding the next big tech trade, you know, should hopefully resonate with your listeners.
Yep, absolutely. And I guess for token metrics, you talked about a subscription-based model for, your revenue model. Is that what it's going to look like going forward, or will there be different types of revenue models for token metrics?
Okay, this is a good question. So we're going to have multiple branches, right? We're going to have, you know, we're going to have the retail model, the institutional model. We're going to have another branch. It's actually going to be a separate company, but it's called TM Ventures. And that's going to be like a hedge fund, both trading the market with our tools, okay, and investing in small cap gems. You know, we're working on a DeFi-based protocol, okay? So there's multiple ways that we're expanding our business, because we've got the platform, the tech, and the people to do a really big expansion, okay? And, you know, when you add the tech to the human element, you know, we're able to leverage our human capital in ways other people can't.
Gotcha. What are your thoughts generally on the regulatory landscape for crypto right now? I know there was a lot of buzz about the infrastructure bill. There was a lot of, they were trying to sneak in language to regulate the crypto industry. Generally, people in the crypto world, a lot of people in Bitcoin got involved and contacted their legislators to voice their opinion on what they thought of the proposed regulations to avoid stifling innovation in this space. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? What do you see with regulation going on in the crypto world?
All right. So the SEC has made its original statement that if people are doing crypto, they want people towards Bitcoin, right? Even though this ETF may dent returns because it's going to have a high fee structure, you know, the SEC is afraid of the decentralized universe. In other words, interest rates on US dollars right now are zero. Inside the DeFi system, the decentralized finance system, you know, really the minimum return you can get on a version of the tokenized US dollar is say between 5 and 6%, and that can go up to 20. So the mechanism for controlling interest rates is being moved into the decentralized universe. And I can sort of understand why that would unnerve the government, right? They want to have a certain degree of control over monetary policy and interest rates. So it's not clear whether or not, you know, the entire DeFi universe is going to have to locate itself overseas. I suspect this strange language, this saber rattling from the infrastructure bill, is the voice of banks telling their legislatures that if you allow all of this to go decentralized, like as in all of finance, that may benefit the people, but it hurts us, as in the banks and the central banks. So there's going to have to be a balance between, you know, allowing decentralized finance, okay, without killing the entire crypto industry. And honestly, the more people want Bitcoin and crypto, because institutions are now hiring people, just they have to talk about crypto because everyone's asking for it. So, and also there's a geopolitical element in the sense that people discovered that the crypto community is vocal. And if you want to get popular, even if you're with an unpopular party, regardless of your affiliation, regardless of your views, you want to get popular, you come out as pro-crypto, you've got a lot of votes instantly. So while the regulation isn't looking so good for decentralized finance right now, don't doubt that irrelevant political parties and politicians don't start embracing crypto as a way to pick up voters, because crypto people are serious about wanting to keep their decentralized finance and their decentralized universe intact.
I think you, just like any brand new innovation, the legacy system is going to be nervous about something coming in and wiping them out. Would you say it's similar to like DeFi to the legacy systems, like Uber and taxi, something like that?
Well, I don't think it's quite Uber and taxis. It may be like Netscape and Explorer, the browsers, right? In other words, there's one way of using the internet and then another comes out, and then it's Safari and then Chrome. So, you know, DeFi can't replace legacy because the money that may go into DeFi, because right now it's $200 billion. And I remember when it was shocking that it crossed $10 billion, right? The funnel for money has to come through legacy. Okay, so crypto is almost going to be like a part of legacy portfolios. Now, the people who may wind up taxis could be certain components of Silicon Valley. There's a whole part of the cryptoverse related to NFTs, which is like artwork. And then there's the metaverse, which is essentially a digital, you know, world, literally a whole digital world. Facebook is trying to get involved in this as their way of keeping their platform relevant. You know, in crypto, the metaverse and people's ability to interact on a totally digital basis, which includes shopping, living, you know, all the way down to the Matrix, almost like, I don't know, semi-dystopia, where you literally live in the artificial world. I personally think that the crypto version of that will be better than anything that comes from Silicon Valley. So the guys who should be nervous probably are the Silicon Valley people who stand to lose from the flock wanting to get content, wanting to go shopping, and wanting to do things in the metaverse rather than, frankly, in the real world. So we also refer to this as Web3. So finance, entertainment, content, Silicon Valley sort of left out, and then a whole new generation of the internet came along just like social media, Web 2.0 created a revolution, Web 3.0 is coming.
What are your thoughts on companies on the stock exchange that are directly tied to crypto, such as MicroStrategy, Square, crypto mining companies and stuff like that? Right. I mean, I feel like you're seeing a lot more of those pop up. And do you ever see yourself, see the company including some of these metrics into the token metrics analytics?
Okay, good point. So believe it or not, most large cap equities have already been what I would call tokenized in the crypto derivatives universe. So Tesla trades 24 hours a day via a tokenized version, a token that follows Tesla's stock. Now, in terms of crypto-based equities, we track MicroStrategy. We track the stock of Galaxy Digital, which is a major crypto hedge fund. You know, he was Michael Saylor. Mike Novogratz was Michael Saylor before Michael Saylor, sort of like the original Bitcoin pioneer from an institutional investment point of view. I think when it comes to the small cap equity market, you know, it's easy to put blockchain in the name of your company and have people instantly come in and buy it. I don't think that's the best place to invest. I think it's the other reason why the SEC wants to have a Bitcoin ETF so that people aren't piling into the stocks of, say, miners. I mean, those stocks are fine, right? They're mining Bitcoin and holding it. They're doing what MicroStrategy and Tesla do. They just put the Bitcoin on their balance sheet and leave it there. Okay, so there are equities out there, but I really think the SEC wants people in traditional crypto assets rather than, you know, trying to speculate in small cap stocks allegedly tied to blockchain.
Gotcha. What kind of feedback are you getting from users on Token Metrics right now?
Users are loving Token Metrics 2.0. So we've released a whole new version of our site that gives you really robust rankings and a portfolio. So the feedback we're getting from our customers on the new version of Token Metrics is solid because it's helping them, you know, pick up some of the big movers in the bull market. You know, TV and YouTube is also picking up. You know, we're getting close to 100K followers on YouTube. And, you know, we believe that in the retail space, right, rather than listening to, you know, pure personality-driven work on YouTube, that we're in a class by ourselves because we can have personality, but we can also have unique analytics. So the fact that we're not famous yet is okay. Because I think one day everyone's going to wake up and discover us. And the longer it takes to discover us, ironically, the bigger the explosion that our presence in the marketplace will have. People will realize, oh my God, these guys have the roadmap.
Awesome. Without giving any financial advice, is there a few coins that you can talk about that you feel bullish about right now, today?
I can talk certain things, right? So, you know, we believe Ethereum can benefit if there's either a dollar crisis, and we also believe Ethereum is the better hedge against inflation because it's most closely related mathematically to gold, silver, and copper. So the worse inflation gets, the better it is, ironically, for Ethereum. A lot of people think it's Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin can also go up. Bitcoin is hard money. Bitcoin is a store of value. But the inflation hedge may be Ethereum. Now, other what we call layer ones, those are like highways like Mopac and 35, like Solana, okay, Avalanche. Solana was made famous by Multicoin Capital in Austin. Okay, these different highways, like, wouldn't it be great in Austin if you had Mopac, 130, 35, and three other tollways, right? Sick of traffic, all right? Crypto has a way of like sprouting up new ways to travel around the crypto universe for both finance and trading, as well as art, right? I think the next big trade, as I hinted, was in like the metaverse. And then there's also a play in securities tokens, which we're researching, you know, avidly right now. That could be the next trade where people start issuing securities on the blockchain, and people also start taking traditional financial assets and sort of breaking them up like real estate so that they can be sold to little people. Because if you can't afford, say, a $3 million painting, or, you know, if you can't afford to invest in commercial real estate in downtown Austin, you might be getting, be able to get a little piece of that via a securities token. So those are the themes, you know, that we're looking at without, you know, giving particular investment advice. I would say, you know, one thing that we are looking closely at is Polkadot. Polkadot is essentially a blockchain of blockchains. And without going into it, we believe Polkadot is Web3, right? It is the thing that's going to make banking, trading, securities tokens, and the internet function in the cryptoverse. And it is coming online very soon.
Do you guys track any of the derivatives market for crypto?
We do. I mean, you've got to be watching Bitcoin futures at the CME in the legacy world, right? Because that's what's driving the ETFs. Inside crypto, there are derivatives exchanges like PERP, Perpetual Protocol, and DYDX. You know, crypto is a very leveraged space. You know, there are also, you know, coins and protocols that help people create synthetic assets. In English, that means like a digital version of Tesla stock that trades 24 hours a day. So mainly for analytics, we've got to track leverage in the system. We've got to track how levered people get, because when the market washes itself out, the big crashes, the big moves frequently are propelled by people who have over-speculated or bet with borrowed money. So we definitely have to follow what's going on in derivatives, both in crypto legacy derivatives and the derivatives leveraged trading with borrowed money space inside the cryptoverse.
Gotcha. I'm not sure if you can do this, if you're able to, but can you give, do you have any price predictions for the end of the year on some of the bigger cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and maybe like Polkadot?
Okay. So in Ethereum, if the cycle continues, right? If the big problem in 2022 turns out to be inflation, or there's a problem with the US dollar because of lack of confidence in the US government, our mathematics using those scenarios, right, show that Ethereum can get anywhere between 8 and 12K. Okay. Currently, as we're recording this, Ethereum is around 4K, right? So end of year, if there is stagnation in Bitcoin, that could allow Ethereum to take off. Okay, in terms of Polkadot, you know, Polkadot may be done at 50. Right now it's at 42. If this Web3 trade really takes off, Polkadot could move to 80 or 100. Now, is that a 2021 phenomenon? I don't know. It depends how much speculative excess develops in the market. Polkadot may be a 2022 trade. I'm hoping it's not a 2023 trade. But 80K Bitcoin, 8 to 10K Ethereum, and $80 polka dot are all possible. But what I tell people about those targets or those ideas, it's not investment advice, and there's a way to buy these things when they're down, right? Don't buy, and we call it FOMO, fear of missing out. Like, don't FOMO in, you know, look at crypto, not investment advice, on down days and down weeks. Because what the crypto market has proved is that even if things go lower, like let's just say the month of November starts off terrible because of regulatory and tax concerns, that doesn't mean we're changing our long-term outlook as to what the best hedge is for inflation, what's Web3, what's hard money and a store of value, right? So yes, we have targets, but we also have strategic thinking around those targets, which is how we at Tokenmetrics want to help your listeners, our customers, your viewers, our viewers.
Excellent. Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you'd like to highlight for listeners about Tokenmetrics, whether it be about a product or anything that's available for people to check out?
Okay, well, stay tuned for, you know, the independent release of Tokenmetrics TV. So if you're out there going, oh my God, how do I figure this out? Right? I know somebody that was like, yeah, my boyfriend is spending all day and night going through YouTube trying to learn crypto. Imagine if you could, you know, ride a commuter train and download Tokenmetrics TV like Hulu and watch us 10 minutes a day or an hour a week on a weekend, right? As a way to be up to date on what's happening now and what could happen in the future. Learning as you go. So the AI, the machine learning, the site is something you can graduate to after you've done TV, or you can wrap it all together. So the idea that, you know, we've gone off YouTube, right? In other words, we're on YouTube, but the premium content is actually on a TV channel, which is a bold strategy, because we believe that's the best way for you to get your start in crypto, right? Like, how do I get involved? The way you get involved is to start with reputable research from people who care, and that's us at Tokenmetrics.
So to wrap up here also, listeners can also invest in Tokenmetrics, my understanding, through the WeFunder platform. Can you just talk a little bit about that and then let listeners know where they can learn more about you and Tokenmetrics online?
Okay, so for regulatory purposes, I can point you to WeFunder.com/Tokenmetrics. Our investing round is still open. All right, that's about the limit of what I'm allowed to say about that. Tokenmetrics.com, you know, has got an extensive tour of all of our offerings, including the TV product under the products tab. And then, you know, if you just want to get a feel for what's happening, you know, our social media guy is putting out, I think, 60 posts a week. And we're on YouTube regularly because he takes our live stream and sort of cuts it up into clips that are easily digestible. So, you know, we're doing everything possible to bring people to the platform, to bring people to crypto, and bring people to us as a company.
Excellent. Bill, you lived in Austin for some time. And my last question to you is, what's your favorite restaurant in Austin, Texas?
Well, I love the banana pudding at Threadgill's, right? That was when I first came to town in 2000. Hopefully, you know, they stay around. You know, if they can't, it's really hard to beat Terry Black's for barbecue, right? So, you know, keep Austin weird out there.
Excellent. Both great choices. I love both restaurants. Bill Noble, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking about Token Metrics and a little bit about your background. Best of luck. Listeners, please check them out. Check out the website. Check out the WeFunder page. I'll put the information on the show notes so folks can learn more about it. And Bill, maybe we could have you again sometime on the podcast.
Sir, call anytime.
Appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by our affiliate, Gemini. Gemini is a well-respected cryptocurrency exchange started by Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss. If you're interested in purchasing Bitcoin, Ethereum, or other altcoins, please check out their website at gemini.sjv.io/moontower to learn all about it. Thank you.